Okay, good morning. I just wanted to speak just two quick halachos that we spoke from previous weeks, and then I want to do today's topic. And then I want to be able to say a few important things about Tu B'Shvat, just the last 5-10 minutes, if I may. Something not on halacha so much. Just two halachas. One thing that we spoke about the past couple weeks that came up, so I went to Rabbi Sachs just to clarify something. We were discussing Tate when we were learning the halachas of Kosev and Tsartsura, and we learned the halachas of Amachik a few weeks ago. So as far as scooping out tuna fish, the tuna fish or chopped liver or egg salad in a morning in a perfect, with a specialized utensil that makes like a perfect ball. So the question is that allowed or not? So originally we had said that's okay, because even though it's a perfect ball, but a ball is really not, maybe a ball, but a circle is really not so much. He doesn't like the halacha that I'm saying. A ball is not so much a specific shape. However, there are those, I found that afterwards, that the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says it could be a problem of bone, of building. There could be issues with that. So I asked Rabbi Sachs what to say, and he said that you're allowed to use a specialized utensil to make a perfect circle of the chopped liver or the egg salad, but he said that you shouldn't be deliberate in making it, picture perfect, like a picture perfect circle. Now, when you come to a caterer by, Shabbos Shavuot Brachos or Bar Mitzvah, it could be a perfect ball, but it could be they have non-Jews working in the kitchen. It's not necessarily, your job to, look in the kitchen and see what they're doing, but you shouldn't be deliberate. That's why Rabbi Sachs told me to say it over, that you shouldn't be deliberate to make it into a perfect, perfect ball, but you are allowed to use a specialized utensil like a scooper, or ice cream scooper, or a scooper to use for the chopped liver and the egg salad. Another halacha, which I've been meaning to clarify or correct, I should say, for the past couple weeks that we said a few weeks ago. I apologize if anyone lost that on the Shabbos nap because of it. When we were discussing the halachos of hachana and preparing, so we said that you are allowed to take a nap on Shabbos afternoon, even though you're doing it really so you could stay up late, Matzah Shabbos. But we said that you shouldn't say outright that I'm doing this so I could stay up late tonight. So one thing that I had added, which I had seen in a certain sefer, that if you do say that, then you're not allowed to go to sleep. That's what I had added, and I had seen that in a certain sefer. I did some more research, and I spoke to Rabbi Sachs, and he said that you do not have to not go to sleep because of that. What you should just do is, you should say out loud and change your mindset and say, no, I'm really not doing it for tonight. I'm really just doing it because I enjoy my Shabbos afternoon naps. So again, please be mochel me if the past few weeks you lost your nap because of that. But I did more research, and in the Piskei Tshuvos, they bring that it's not so much a problem of achana, it's a problem of other issues. But if you do say it, you don't have to not go to sleep. Okay, so today's topic is going to be the halachos of schita ba'ochlin, which means squeezing out foods, the juice from inside of certain foods. So now, one of the 39 malachos is called dush. Dush is one of the 39 malachos. Dush means threshing. Now, what threshing really is that you have grain you take out from the chaff. So the malacha of dush is taking out a food from inside another food. That's the av malacha, dush. A tolda of that, which is forbidden on a d'oraisa level, could be, is schita, which means to squeeze. You're not allowed to squeeze things out. And I'm sure you all know the halachos as far as you have garments or towels and things that get wet. Those halachos we're not going to discuss today. But what we're going to discuss is when you have foods and you want to squeeze out the liquid from another food. So what's the halacha with squeezing out liquids from foods? So just like in the previous weeks, we try to categorize everything just to make it mesudr and to make it as easy as possible to follow. So there are three categories, there's three levels of squeezing out a liquid from a food. Category number one, which will give you memories of Mamachik. Category number one is foods that are forbidden on a Da'iraisa level, that are forbidden mid-Da'iraisa, according to Torah law, that you're not allowed to squeeze out the juice from those foods. Category number two is going to be foods that are only forbidden on a Derabanan level, only mid-Derabanan. And number three, category number three, is going to be foods that are totally permitted, liquids that are totally permitted. So let's go through step one, two, and three, which foods fall into each category, and what is the stringencies of categories number one over number two, and two over number three. So the foods that are forbidden on a d'oraisa level, number one, are olives and grapes. olives and grapes, zeisim va'anavim. Foods that are, we'll do first full category number one. So olives and grapes. Now, why are olives and grapes forbidden on a d'oraisa level? Why are those the most strict? And we need to discuss what are those stringencies that we have by olives and grapes. The reason why those is a big discussion, why olives and grapes are the most strict. Basically, what comes out is that the juice, the liquid that comes from olives and the liquids that comes from grapes, those are liquids that are very chashiv. Those are liquids that are on its highest form. We have other words for them. They're called oil and wine. You could also call it grape juice, but basically it's oil and wine. So the zeisim, the olives and the grapes that come out from there, those are considered the most chashiv, and those are, it's normal to squeeze those out for the purpose of the liquid. So therefore those are the most strict, olives and grapes. So now, what is the stringencies with olives and grapes on Shabbos that you're not allowed to squeeze out for the liquid? So one thing for sure, you're not allowed to go over to an olive or grape and squeeze it out onto a plate, purposely go and squeeze it out, and you're not allowed to squeeze it out for the purpose of the juice. That would be forbidden on a d'oraisa level. But we have other stringencies as well. If the juice from an olive or a grape comes out by itself, then you are not allowed to drink those juices on Shabbos. If it came out by itself. Now, for example, right, we all know that it's dangerous to give grapes to little children. You want to give them grapes, that's a healthy snack. So what do? We cut it in half, or we cut it in thirds. So we cut the grapes and then we give it to the child. If you cut it on a plate, many, many times, the juice oozes out by itself after I took the knife and I cut the grape in half, so the juice comes out. That juice is not allowed to be drunk on Shabbos. You, or preferably even the child, should not drink those juices on Shabbos that came out by itself. There are those that say that even that juice is muksa, okay, which can make the plate muksa, perhaps. If we ever discussed halachos of muksa, we'll get into halachos of that. But something that needs to be, you need to be careful that any juice that comes out by itself from an olive or a grape, you're not allowed to drink those juices on Shabbos. What some people suggest, hold on 1 second, we're going to have to hold off on questions just now, just for a few minutes. What some people suggest is that you don't cut the grapes on a plate, but rather you cut it on a napkin. And then a napkin, automatically it seeps into the napkin, and therefore it's gone, and you could just throw out the napkin. You don't have to worry about it goes le'ibud. You don't have to worry about it's on a plate, and now it really could be saved, and then is it muksa, is it not muksa? If you do it straight onto a napkin, then it just goes straight into the napkin, and then you just throw the napkin out, and it's not a big deal as far as muksa. But that person needs to be careful when you cut olives or grapes. Number two, another stringency by olives and grapes is that you're not allowed to take a grape or an olive and suck it, hold it in your hands, and suck the juice out directly into your mouth. Meaning, surely if you squeeze it out onto a plate on purpose, you're not allowed to. But even to suck it straight into your mouth. There are certain types of grapes, especially the real chashuv, like wine grapes, those are very enjoyable to squeeze straight into your mouth. But you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos, straight into your mouth, because we're afraid that you may come to squeeze it purposely, like into a cup or onto a plate. So you're not allowed to take an olive or a grape and squeeze it and suck it straight into your mouth. You're allowed to put it in your mouth and suck it, and then even take it out, but you're not allowed to hold it in your hand and suck on the grape or the olive. Now, a lot of times when you serve olives in a dish, they'll have the juice with it, you know, it comes from the can and the juice with it. That's not the juice from inside the olive. I don't think, you know, if you pick up some olives from the bowl, has like the juice that, you know, dripping from it, that's not juice from inside the olive. So if you just want to suck that off, I don't think that would be a problem. But the juice from inside an olive or the juice from inside a grape, you're not allowed to hold in your hands and suck out. Those are two stringencies. We're going to see more, but those are two stringencies for olives and grapes, because those are forbidden on a d'oraisa level. What's the second category is foods. Yeah, very quick.
Just, but like, let's say you're making a fruit salad where you cut in grapes, and then like there's always like liquid in the fruit salad. Do you have to worry about some of the liquid?
Okay, that's a good question. If you're cutting the grapes and it goes into the fruit salad, so let's wait till we get to the halachas of cutting of the juice straight into a salad, like squeezing lemons on salmon and things like that, and onto salad. So we'll get to that. When we get to those halachas in a few minutes, we'll get back to grapes over there. Okay. The second category, which is forbidden midrabanan, is foods that are not like olives and grapes, but they're not like the ultimate form of the juice, but they are fruits or vegetables that are commonly squeezed for the juice. So now, what are some examples of the second category? Meaning, it's not something that you never ever squeeze for the juice, just this person happens to want to. It's not on the level of olive and grapes. So what the Shulchan Aruch says is two simverimonim. He says berries and pomegranates. Berries and pomegranates. That is something that is forbidden on a derabanan level, which again, we still have to talk about what the halachos of something that's also on a derabanan level. Berries and pomegranates. However, and berries include strawberries and cherries. The Paiskim say that there's other foods included in that as well, even though the Shulchan Aruch only gives those examples, but the Paiskim say that there are plenty of other foods that could be included in that, because now we export foods all over the world and we have juices for many other types of foods. So many Paiskim say that included in that are oranges, apples, grapefruits, pineapples, and tomatoes. So those types of foods are quite commonly squeezed for the juice. So those are forbidden on a derabanan level. Now, Rabbi Yashuv holds, and Rabbi Yashuv should have a refuah shleima in zchus that we're saying Torah from Rabbi Yashuv. And I spoke to Rabbi Sachs this morning, and he put a major twist on it, and he said that you really should be choshesh for this opinion of Rabbi Yashuv, that Rabbi Yashuv holds that grapefruits and oranges have the same halacha as olives and grapes. That nowadays, grapefruits and oranges are very, very, very commonly used for the juice, right? You have to know exactly how much percentage of in the world of oranges is used for the juice and grapefruits is used for juice, but there is a very strong opinion that grapefruits and oranges would have the same halacha as category number one, which means if you want to take an orange and you cut an orange into eight slices, you would not be allowed, according to this opinion. And Rabbi Sachs said, again, not everyone here is bound to Rabbi Sachs's opinion, but it is Rabbi Yashuv, so it is a chumrah that is brought down. And Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Aruch says it's not. You know, there's it's a machlokas. You know, so that's why I went to Rabbi Sachs this morning, just to clarify how I should say it over. So Rabbi Sachs said it is important to be choshesh for this opinion, that grapefruits and oranges also you should not take it in your hands and squeeze it out. We'll discuss in a few minutes eating grapefruits with a spoon, but to take it and hold it in your fingers and to squeeze it out. Either way, the opinion category number two, whether it is oranges or grapefruits or apples, which even though there is such a thing as apple juice and we use it a lot, but many, many, many people use apples just stam, they eat regular apples, so that will be on category number two. Those are things that are only forbidden on a derabanan level. Things that are only forbidden on a derabanan level, you are allowed to hold it in your hand and suck out the juice like that. And also, if you cut an apple into pieces and the juice oozes out, then those two stringencies don't apply and the juice would be permitted. Included in this category number two, besides the apples, pineapples, and tomatoes, and perhaps the oranges and grapefruits, are any other foods that have an outside liquid seeped into it. Meaning some people like to dip challah in wine, or if you have oil in tuna fish, or I think we discussed that at one point. You have oil, you have a tuna fish, and there's oil inside the tuna fish. Or you have like a chicken cutlet, and there's oil seeped in the chicken cutlet. Or if you have a zucchini and a celery from chicken soup, and it's full of chicken soup, so you want to get out the sogginess. So included in all these halachas, we'll have to see step by step, but that would all be included in category number two. So again, if it came out unintentionally, it would be mutter to use. Also, you're allowed to suck it while holding in your mouth. When you squeeze, another leniency for category number two is, for all these foods, if you're squeezing out the liquid, not for the purpose of the liquid, but just to improve the solid, then that is permitted. By foods that are forbidden only on a derabanan level, if you're squeezing out the liquid to improve the solid, then that would be permitted. So let's say you open up a tuna fish can, which we discussed a few weeks ago, how exactly we're supposed to up tuna fish cans on Shabbos. But you open up the tuna fish can and you want to get out the oil. So you want to get out the oil. So how are you allowed to get out the oil from the tuna fish? So you're allowed to get out the oil from the tuna fish because you're getting out the liquid not for the purpose of the liquid. You're getting out the liquid to improve the tuna fish. That you don't want the tuna fish full of oil, whether it's health reasons or taste reasons. So you are allowed to get rid of the oil from the tuna fish. It's not a problem of schita because you're doing it to improve the taste or the texture of the solid. Now you need to be careful when you squeeze out the tuna fish, the oil from the tuna fish, or when you squeeze out the oil from a chicken cutlet, or any type of sogginess from a matzo ball or a celery, a zucchini, you're not allowed to do it with a kli. Right? These are halachas of borer. You need to be careful for borer as well. So you need to do it for immediate use, as we spoke about the lochus of borer, you need to do it without a utensil. You're not allowed to use the tuna fish cover, the top, the lid, to squeeze out the oil, because that's using a kli, that's making using a utensil to make it more efficient. As far as getting the ochel mitoch psoles, the good from the bad, I don't see how you could do that, but it, the paiskim say you're allowed to do it. My assumption is, if I understand them correctly, is because when we discuss the halachos of peeling foods, when you have a peel, you have an orange peel surrounding the orange, so you're taking out you're taking the bad from the good. Why is that permitted? So we said when we discussed halachos of borah that since by a peel it's the only way to do it, so that's not considered borah, that's called your way of eating, that's called derech achila. So I assume over here as well, the only way to get out the oil from the tuna fish or the oil from the chicken cutlet or whatever it is, the only way to do it is to squeeze it out. So therefore, that's not a problem of psoles mitoch ochel. But again, you still have to do it for immediate use, and you still have to do it without a kli. So if you want to get the oil from the tuna fish, dump the tuna fish onto, let's say, a napkin or a cloth, and you would squeeze it out like that. And then the napkin you would just simply throw in the garbage. The napkin's not considered a kli. And then you would do it for immediate use. Then that would be permitted to get out the oil from the tuna fish. Gravy from a slice of meat or fish or chicken, similar types of things, that it's another liquid that's seeped into another food. Another leniency which you had touched upon is another leniency that we have by the category number two is squeezing out the liquid straight onto a solid, meaning the liquid is now inside a solid, it's inside the lemon or it's inside one of the other foods, and you are squeezing it straight directly onto a solid. Since you're squeezing it straight onto a solid, so the liquid never gets a din, a halacha of a liquid. It went from a food directly to a food. So since it went from a food directly to a food, so we say that that is permitted by foods that are only in category two, not in category number one, but foods that are category number two, that would be permitted. So let's give some examples. Hold on 1 second. Let's just give some examples of squeezing something out from a solid directly to another solid. For this to be mutter, from a solid, squeezing out the liquid from a solid to a solid, has to have one of two things, one of two conditions to make it that are considered as if it went from a solid to a solid. Now, either number one, the juice needs to improve the taste of the solid, improve the taste of solid number two. I mean, so let's say I have a salad and I want to squeeze a lemon. Part of my salad dressing is to squeeze a lemon directly onto the lettuce and the tomatoes and the cucumbers and the peppers. So since that's improving the taste of the solid, so then we say that, oh, now that becomes part of the solid, and it went from one solid straight into another solid. That's in order to kedei lasaken ochel, to fix the new food, not to fix, but to improve the taste of the second salad, then that would be permitted. So if you have a lemon and you don't have any lemon juice, or you want to use a real lemon because that tastes better, you're allowed to squeeze it directly onto the salad. You're not allowed to squeeze it into a cup and then mix it with other things and then pour it onto the salad, because first you put it into a cup. You have to squeeze the lemon directly onto the salad. You can't squeeze, sorry? Okay, we're going to get to tea in a moment, because tea is a liquid. We'll get to that in a moment. You can't squeeze, let's say, an orange or any of these other types of foods onto a cookie, because a cookie, of course, it doesn't improve the taste of the cookie. The fact that you're doing it onto a solid is not a free-for-all. It has to be that it improves the taste of solid number two.
But an orange, you may not be able to do it
all. An orange may not be able to do it all. If you go with that stringency, then orange, anyways, you wouldn't be able to do it all. Yeah, some of the examples have to switch according to that stringency.
Just to make sure I understand.
Or you could either that it's improving the ochel, or number two, another condition that could be is if the juice is absorbed into the solid, if it's squeezed onto solid number two, if it's absorbed into solid number two. You're not allowed to do this into a liquid, but if it's absorbed into another solid. So, meaning if you squeeze, let's say, a lemon directly onto salmon or to a salad, so then even if it's not absorbed, okay, the truth is over there, it enhances the taste. Even if let's say you have something that you could squeeze onto another salad that doesn't enhance the taste, but if it's absorbed into the solid, which we'll get to tea, squeezing it onto sugar, that could be another way out, that you squeeze it directly from a solid straight onto another solid, that it gets absorbed into the solid. So now, let's get to tea. If you have tea and you want lemon in your tea, so what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to take a slice of lemon and drop it into your tea. You're allowed to just drop it straight into the tea, because there, any juice that comes out from the lemon happens by itself. I didn't go ahead and squeeze the lemon, even though I'm putting it into liquid, but I didn't do it directly. I just dropped the lemon, the slice of lemon, into my tea. But if I want to squeeze, let's say another way out is, once the lemon is in your cup of tea, you're not allowed to take a spoon and squeeze the lemon like hard against the side of the cup. Why? Because you're squeezing the juice of the lemon into the tea, which is a liquid. That doesn't help. You're not allowed to squeeze out the liquid into another liquid. You're only allowed to squeeze it into another solid. So if you want a slice of tea with lemon inside, then you just have to simply drop the lemon inside the tea, and you're not allowed to squeeze the lemon into the tea. And even once it's in the tea, you're not allowed to go take a utensil and squeeze it, even with your fingers if it's not hot, but you're not allowed to squeeze the lemon off to the side of the cup, and then the juice comes out. You're not allowed to specifically go ahead, maybe it's only forbidden in Midrabanan, but you're not allowed to specifically go ahead and squeeze the tea.
That'd be a
Bishul
problem?
Bishul, let's say, besides Bishul, let's say the tea is cooled off. Let's say the tea used the klishlishi, kirvi, whatever it is, so then let's say without the Bishul issues. The Mishnah Berurah says another idea that what you can do, which touches upon what you discussed, what you asked, is you could take the lemon, let's say you really want the lemon in your tea, besides just dropping it in the tea. Let's say you don't want to drop it in the tea because it's going to get, you know, too much lemon taste. So what you're allowed to do is, says the Mishnah Berurah, you're allowed to squeeze the lemon onto some sugar. You have sugar in a spoon or a sugar cube, and you squeeze the lemon directly onto the sugar. Now, directly onto the sugar, sugar is a solid. So even if it doesn't improve the taste of the sugar, I don't think squeezing lemon, as far as the sugar is concerned, it doesn't enhance the taste of the sugar, but you do have condition number two, that it's absorbed into the sugar. And that would be permitted according to the Mishnah Berurah. Chazanish says no, but the Mishnah Berurah says that would be permitted. You're taking the lemon, squeezing it straight onto the sugar, and then you could put the sugar into the tea. So again, some people don't necessarily want the lemon just dropped into the tea because they're going to get too much taste. So what they do is they squeeze the lemon onto the sugar. The sugar is a solid. Since it's a solid, then you have that leniency of doing it onto a solid, that it gets absorbed, and then that would be permitted. As far as eating grapefruits, now grapefruits, we said, according to some opinions of Shem Zalman Orbach, it's category number 2, and it's only forbidden midrabanan, but Rabbi Yashiv and Rabbi Sack said we should be choshesh for this, is to hold that it's opinion number 1. So a lot of people, those of you, I don't know how many people here are grapefruits, I personally don't like grapefruits very much, but if you take a grapefruit, so a lot of people do, my mother loves grapefruit, she used to always do this, after she finished eating the grapefruit, she would pick up the grapefruit and squeeze it out into the spoon, and then she would drink it. So that for sure is not allowed to be done on Shabbos. My mother, Chas Shalom, never did it on Shabbos. She does it during the week. But I meant she does it during the week. So you pick up the grapefruit, and you're not allowed to on Shabbos squeeze it out. Again, that's either forbidden midrabanan or perhaps midraisa. But you're for sure not allowed to pick up the grapefruit and squeeze it out, hold on one second, onto the spoon. But as I'm sure you all know, even if you don't eat grapefruits, you all know this, that when you take a spoon and you scoop out the grapefruit, the juice is going to automatically come out. So if it's unintentional, so we said that if it's category 2, that is permitted because it happens unintentionally. I didn't do that on purpose. I was just getting the grapefruit. How about if it's category number 1? According to Rabbi Yashiv, that grapefruit is category number 1, that even if something comes out unintentionally, it's still forbidden. However, over here, Rabbi Yashiv himself says that is permitted by grapefruits. You're allowed to drink the juice that ends up on the bottom of the grapefruit. You're allowed to drink that, and it's for sure not muksa. You're allowed to drink that. Why? Because it comes out from the grapefruit and it stays in the grapefruit itself, even if it doesn't get absorbed. But since it's all part of the grapefruit, then it doesn't have a chashivas of mashke, of a liquid by itself, because I didn't squeeze it out, and it's not on a plate by itself. It's from the grapefruit, in the grapefruit, by the grapefruit, and it's all in the grapefruit, and it's still considered all part of the food of the grapefruit. Therefore, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Orbach for sure says it's mutter, and Rabbi Yashiv himself says that would be permitted. So as far as grapefruits, basically you're allowed to eat a grapefruit the same on Shabbos as during the week. However, the only thing you have to be careful of is you're not allowed to go specifically pick up the grapefruit and squeeze it out onto the spoon. Now, as far as your question before, which was a good question, let's say you're cutting grapes into a salad, so if grapes are forbidden according to Torah law, so then some of the juice oozes out, we don't have that, I don't think we have that leniency of going directly into a food. Now, even over there, it doesn't get absorbed into the other foods in the salad, and I don't think it enhances the taste per se, you know, I mean, the grapes taste good, but I don't think it enhances the taste. I have to check into that more. It could be, you know, that would be a problem.
And also, can you drink, like, I'm making a fruit salad, like, especially you, and if you throw in the grapes and the oranges, like, there's that juice on the bottom of the fruit salad, which is really good.
Right, so that comes out by itself. Those are all foods that are only, at best, forbidden on a Darabonon level, and then that would be permitted to drink. Those would be permitted
right,
to drink.
But if it does have with it grapes and grapes.
Oh, okay.
And
so
stuff, then
I'm not sure. So first, let me find out what the halacha is by the grapes. It could be that would be a problem by the grapes. It could be its bottle. It could be its The best would probably be to cut the grapes beforehand outside the bowl on a napkin. You just throw the napkin out, and then the juice that would come out from the grapes is basically nothing. Once it's ready cut, then you just throw them in. That's what I would suggest. You'll be able to avoid.
But how about the grapefruits?
The grapefruits also be the same halacha. If you would be strict to hold that it's like the on a deraisa
right,
level,
so
same
idea.
The juice
in the bottom of the bowl.
No, but that never left the grapefruit. That's what we're saying.
No, it's a bowl. It's not a
like
grapefruit.
It didn't stay in the grapefruit.
Oh,
you're saying it came out afterwards. Okay,
you have
perhaps.
Fruit salad and you have like
that's a chumra upon a chumra. Maybe I'd have to think about that more. Right, so then according to opinion number one, then if you hold like Rabbi Yashav and like Rabbi Sachs is saying to be machra, like, so then yeah, you know, you would not be allowed to drink that grapefruit juice.
So you can't, the grapefruit juice that ended up in the grapefruit, you can't turn it over.
Right, you shouldn't turn it over, right, and have it separate from, yeah, I was imagining. The last category, which is totally permitted, is foods that we don't use at all for the juice, just this person, you just happen to want to do it for the juice, that's totally not a problem whatsoever. You're allowed to even go ahead and squeeze it. Things like melons, which include honeydew and cantaloupe and watermelon and peppers and cucumbers, nobody usually ever squeezes out the juice from those foods for the purpose of the juice. If you specifically get in your head that you want to squeeze out the juices for those things, then that is totally permitted and you're allowed to drink it. And even if you do it for the purpose of the juice, those would be totally permitted. You had a question before? Someone in the back?
It was about the grapefruit.
It was about the grapefruit. Okay, yeah. Okay. I think that basically covers, of course, like I said, by every malacha that we discussed, there's more halachas to discuss, but just basically I wanted to get down to the practical halacha. Yeah.
You cut an orange into wedges,
right.
So you can't bring things to your mouth. You know, some kids like to get it, you know what I mean?
Right, sure, they squeeze it out. So again, so called up Shemazam and Orbach, you are allowed to. But according to Rabbi Yashiv, then even including an orange, you would not be allowed to do that. You're allowed to bite it. You're allowed to put it in your mouth. We said that even by category number one, by olives and grapes and oranges, you're allowed to put it in your mouth and suck out the juice while it's in your mouth. And then you could take it out. Then you're allowed to take it out. But you shouldn't hold it in your hands outside your mouth and squeeze it and suck it out like that. But you're allowed to put it in your mouth, even by olives and grapes, and for sure by oranges. You're allowed to. I know they bite it out, so the biting it, that's called eating. That's not a problem. You know, that's putting it in their mouth. But no, you don't have to put the peel in your mouth per se. By olives and grapes don't have peels, but the oranges have peels. You don't have to put the peels in. You just bite it out, and even the juice that comes out, even if that would be category number one, that's still permitted. Yeah.
Just want to confirm, you can squeeze a lemon onto the salad, but you can't squeeze it into a salad dressing.
Exactly, right, because a salad dressing mix is a liquid. If it's a liquid, you're not allowed to do it into a liquid, even though 20 seconds later I'm going to pour it on top of the salad. That's not allowed on a Darabonon level. Okay, so just take a few minutes. I usually do not do this, but just since tomorrow is Tu B'Shvat, Bez Hashem, so just to talk a little bit about Tu B'Shvat and something that we could learn from it, and it is connected to halacha. I always like to try and tie in everything in some way to halacha. As you know, Tu B'Shvat is what we call Rosh Hashanah for the trees. And the Sfarim tell us that the Mishnayos and the Gemara tells us that the saps of the trees, even though the trees don't have any leaves on it, and the fruit trees, there's no fruits yet on the tree, it's still the winter, but believe it or not, it's still winter, even with the weather. And the sap, the moistness is just starting to come in to the tree, and it's a special time for the trees, and many halachos are based on it, as far as Truma and Meiser and things like that, Arla, that is based on Tu B'Shvat, which is the Rosh Hashanah for trees. And the Sfarim tell us, it's based on Psukim in the Chumash and Psukim in Tehillim, that a person is compared to a tree. The Pasuk in Parashat Shoftim says, Ki Adam Eitz Hasada, that people are compared to trees. Pesukim in the beginning of Tehillim compare people to trees. We say, the Sfarim, the Gemara tells us that the mitzvos that a person does are called their peros, their fruits. And an Am Ha'aret, somebody who doesn't have any mitzvos and doesn't know any Torah whatsoever, is called an Ilan Srak, is called a tree with that doesn't bear fruits. We find many, many connections between a person and trees. So what is the deeper meaning in that connection between people, between Yidden and trees? So one connection that the Sfarim tell us is that if you take a tree or a plant or a flower, if you want that the flower or the plant, you want it to die, to not flourish and to not strive and to not grow, then you don't have to do anything negative to the plant. You don't have to do anything negative to the tree. All you have to do is just not give it any positive. As long as you just don't give it sunlight and you don't give it water, then automatically after time, the plant or the flower or the tree is going to wither away and it's going to die. You don't have to have any bad intentions to go specifically do something negative. As long as you just hold back any positive, that will make that this plant, this flower, is not going to flourish. And that's the same way, that's the same thing when it comes to people. If a person is not working on themselves, if a person is not working on themselves to grow higher, then in his avodas Hashem, his serving of Hashem, is not going to strive. If a person is just going along with the flow, and you go along and you do things, you know, that you taught as a child, and you just never grow and you're never looking to grow higher, then a person is not going to be able to grow, especially when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos. The Chafetz Chaim tells us, who wrote the Mishnah Berurah, he tells us in his introduction to the Mishnah Berurah, to the Halachos of Shabbos, says if a person wants to be Mechal Shabbos, a person doesn't have to specifically, intentionally go ahead and be Mechal Shabbos. All you have to do is just not learn the halachos of Shabbos, and says the Chafetz Chaim, I guarantee you a person will be mechal Shabbos many, many, many times on Shabbos. A person doesn't have to have bad intentions. Oh, I want to go be mechal Shabbos. As long as you don't know the halachos of Shabbos, you're almost guaranteed that on any regular Shabbos, you're going to end up being mechal Shabbos. A person needs to work on learning the halachos and work on himself to go higher. It's nothing to be embarrassed about to admit that, listen, I don't know all the halachos, whether it's halachos of Shabbos, whether it's the halachos of Lashon Hara, whether it's the halachos of davening, or any other halachos, tefillah, many other areas of halacha that a person doesn't have to be worried about. Oh, I'm gonna, you know, I have to admit that I don't know the halachos, and I'm gonna I need to go higher. A person needs to be able to strive higher. I know, you know, this is something I feel very strongly about. You know, that people just, you know, so they call it, they're coasting. You know, they're going along, and you know, of course they follow as many Torah mitzvos as they know, but they're not looking to grow higher. They're not looking to take upon extra chumras. We've said so many times, and I think I said it in the first class, I said it in the second class, in the third, and the fourth, every class it came up, that there's some type of machlokas. Even today, we keep on saying there's a machlokas of Shema Zalman and Rabbi Yashem. There's so many machlokases in Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Brachos, so many different. So which one should we do? Should we take the leniency or should we take the stringency? So sometimes it's like a way out chumrah that, you know, that very few people hold of. Okay, so then it's okay, we could take the leniency. There's some type of leniency that's very hard to rely on, so then we should really take the stringency. But there are so many halachos that are somewhere in between. So what should you do? And I before I started teaching girls, I teach, you know, the 11th grade in the Beis Yaakov. So before I started teaching, so one person told me that you can't say any machlokas in class. You can't say any machlokas. When you teach girls or women, has either mutter or asr. Straight out. You have to be clear cut. So I personally disagreed with that person. I heard where he's coming from, but I disagreed. So I asked my Rebbe. I went to Eretz Yisrael. I had mileage and I went to Eretz Yisrael last summer. And I spoke to my Rebbe, Rabbi Shari Eli. So I asked him, I said, what should I do? I'm starting to teach girls. Could be, you've heard of Rabbi Shari Eli. He gives the biggest shiur in the mirror. Left 300 people. I was by him for a long time. I was very close to him. And I said, you know, what should I do about that? He said, a machlekes is also halacha psuka. Meaning, if you want to, it's a clear halacha. What's the halacha? Is it mutar or asr? It's clear. It's a machlekes. Meaning, he said, that's a clear halacha. It's a machlokas. I am not going to decide between Rabbi Shlomo Zalman and Rabbi Yashi. Even let's say Rabbi Sachs's money. He wasn't deciding. He said, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman and Rabbi Yashi. They're great people. But he's saying, it's good to be machmer. If someone like Rabbi Yashi, it's a good thing to be machmer. People are very scared to be machmer. They're very scared for change. There are a lot of people that are scared of change. People that are dating for many, many years that are scared to change. The people that I need to change jobs, to change neighborhoods. People are scared to change. So different parts of life, so fine. It's not the end of the world. You know, if you don't change the toothpaste you use for the rest of your life, so fine, new. When it comes to halacha, people are so scared to change. Like, I never opened up my soda bottles before Shabbos. You know, if I start opening my, I have to like, you know, speak to, you know, my therapist, you know, is that too bad? So now you have people, you know, husbands tell me that, you know, they open up the soda bottles before Shabbos. It's fantastic. That's a chumrah. It's not even so much a chumrah, because we said all the paiskim, all the paiskim that said you're allowed to open soda bottles on Shabbos, we said, say that preferably you should open up before Shabbos. Even the paiskim that say it's permitted, they say preferably you should do it before Shabbos. So like, that's not something that's such a major outlandish thing. You know, I've already got the report back from many, many different husbands that Rabbi Krohn is a big machmer. He's a big machmer. So why has it come across that I'm a big machmer? Nothing have I ever said is from my own. Why has it come across that I'm a big machmer? I said you can't open cereal boxes unless it's in a destructive fashion. You have to open up your soda bottles before Shabbos. You can't use tea bags on Shabbos. Why? Because, and this is nothing against anybody, this is just the natural way. If a person, there's things that some people say mutter, things that some people say usher. So if a person doesn't know any better, a man, a woman, if a person doesn't know any better, what are they going to do? They're going to do it. They're going to be mako. So you don't realize that I've come with you with so many different leniencies. But why don't I get the reputation of being a mako, a big leniency? Because it's something that people didn't realize is an issue in the first place. So they've been doing it all their life anyway. So Rabbi Krohn said it's mutter. Okay, big deal. So of course it's mutter. But something that I come and say, no, you shouldn't use tea bags on Shabbos, and you shouldn't do this, and you should try to be careful about X, Y, and Z. Oh, so then all of a sudden it's a big machmer. So there's nothing wrong with that. Anytime I open up a sefer, when I learn halachos for the first time, I also, wow, this guy's a big machmer. But then when I look into the halacha, I realize that, I see the Shulchan Aruch says it. So it's not, you know, such a big chumrah. This is the Shulchan Aruch. It's founded. So, you know, my Rosh Hashiva, Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, I learned in the mirror for 8 years, and I was very close to him, and he gave shmuzin Friday afternoon, for every Friday afternoon. So the 3 years that I was there as a bachur, so I used to go every Friday afternoon. Since I went every afternoon, I had a makam kavua. I sat right next to him, to his right. Those of you who know David Ganger, who lives on Pennington, he sat on his left. And Rav Nosson Tzvi, those who know, he had Parkinson's, and he had no control over his legs. He would shake, and that's for that reason itself, I couldn't miss his shmooze. His knees would bang on my knees. He would go back and forth between my knees and David Ganger's knees. Back, he would bang his knees back and forth. I could still feel his knees banging against my knees. And he would come every Friday afternoon and give a shmooze. And of course, if you go every week for 3 years, some things are going to overlap. And one thing that he said so many times, he said, a person is never staying still. They're either going up, 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 or they're going down, down, down. He always said it 3 times. Up, 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 or down, down, down. There's no such thing as staying status quo. If a person is working on themselves, then they're going up. If a person's not working on themselves, whether it's halacha or musar, whatever it is, then a person's going down. And you find it in this week's parasha. This week's parasha coming up is parasha Yisro, right? Hashem says by Matan Torah, Klal Yisro wanted to run up to the Har Sinai, and Hashem said, no, you can't go that high. You're not ready for that level of kedusha. But Klal Yisro wanted to run up. They had that tshuka. They had that desire to go higher and higher. So a lot of people focus on the other half, that Hashem said, no, you can't go too high. You know, you don't want to take upon too much upon yourself at once. But okay, that's as far as seeing Hashem. You know, the major chumras. And yes, a person shouldn't take upon themselves every chumra in the book just like that, because it's gonna fall apart. It's not going to last. A person needs to go gradually. It's not going to last. But a person needs to be able to try and go higher. And you'll find, I'm positive, that you'll find in yourself that if you're careful about, let's say, Hilcha Shabbos, and that's why it's so great that all of you come to, you all have busy schedules, whether you work in the morning, or you don't work in the morning, whatever it is, you all have busy schedules, and you force yourself to come out on a morning, even once a week, just to come learn the halachas. It's so important to be able to go higher in Hilcha Shabbos, and you'll see, I'm positive, that it'll have an effect on you, even for other parts of halacha. Let's say Hilchas Brachos. If you see yourself, I'm somebody who cares about halacha. I force myself, I get myself out of the house every day to come learn Hilcha Shabbos. So evidently, I'm somebody that cares about halachas. So I have to be careful. I can't space out so much anymore during Shemona Esrei, because evidently, I'm somebody who cares about halacha, and I work upon myself. And you'll see that it will have an effect on you. on your children and on your husbands as well. You're in the house and you don't have to like preach it to them. Once you see, if you see that you're cutting the lemons and you're doing certain things, oh, why are you doing it like that? Oh, because it's not so simple. You're not allowed to squeeze out liquids from salads. They'll see your kids, it'll just by osmosis, it'll see that that'll be normal, that in this house we follow, we're careful with halacha. And that'll have an effect on your husbands, whether they like it or not. And they'll see that this is something, and again, you don't have to preach it. It'll be by osmosis that you're following halacha, and this is something that in this house we're careful with halacha. Again, you don't have to take every chumrah in the book, every stringency in the book, but it's something that we're working on ourselves, and that's why it's so important to learn halacha and to work on ourselves in general, and that's something that we could learn from Tu B'Shvat that I think is very important. Originally, this classes are supposed to be for 3 weeks. Baruch Hashem, it was very popular, and Rabbi Sack said we should continue for another 5 weeks. Today was the fifth week. The question is if we should continue. I spoke to Rabbi Sack this morning. He encouraged very much. I didn't give him the speech that I just gave now, but he did encourage very much to continue. We could discuss with Mrs. Goldschmidt as far as if it should be continued. It would be my pleasure to continue. It was discussed. Perhaps maybe we would veer off of the Lamatas Malachos for now. Maybe we would discuss some halachos of muksa. That is not going to be able to be accomplished in 1 week, but definitely you could come 1 week and not the other. There are many areas of muksa. There's still some other that there is what to discuss. I heard it was suggested that maybe when we get closer to Yontif, after Purim, between Purim and Pesach, we'll discuss some halachos of Yontif and Pesach. It'll be my pleasure to do that. So Bez Hashem, hopefully, unless I hear otherwise, we'll be able to continue Mitzvah Shem next week.